this is a book about how and why we protest, and how movements and the forms of protest have changed over time. It juxtaposes the most famous protest in American history, the 1963 March on Washington, with what now stands as the largest protest in American history, which is the 2017 Women's Marches that happened the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated.
And why did you write this book?
I've been a grassroots organizer for decades. I first became involved in organizing in 1981. So I've seen a lot of movements come and go. And I've been haunted by some of the experiences I had with mass protest. I was the mobilizing coordinator for some of the largest protests in U.S. history, the huge anti-war marches of 2003 and 2004, which brought huge numbers of people into the streets, but didn't do what they accomplished, didn't accomplish what they set out to do, didn't stop the war. So after Donald Trump took office and there was this upsurge of protests that, in terms of scale, is larger than anything we've ever seen before in U.S. history, I really wanted to think hard and explain what I saw that was distinctive about this moment and where I see grounds for hope.
So we don't want to give away the ending of the book, but can you tell us a bit about what you found?
The way that protests are organized can actually tell us a whole lot about the way that movements are organized. And so I went deep into the archives to look at some aspects of the 63 March that most people don't know. It's the famous occasion where Dr. King gave his I Have a Dream speech, and it's a, it's a mythic moment in American history. But from an organizing point of view, it represented some of the later stages of a model that was being replaced, a model that relied on charismatic leadership, on top-down organizing, that marginalized women, and that rejected some different kinds of organizing models that women, particularly black women in the civil rights movements, were putting forward. And when you fast forward and you look at both what happened with the women's marches in 2017 and how the resistance to Trump has been organized, the distinctive ways that people have been working since 2017, there are these major changes to a kind of decentralized, bottom-up, women-led style of organizing, which has its strengths and its weaknesses, but definitely represents something very new.
And what do you think accounts for the change in the ways that protests play out?
A lot of this is work that's been quietly happening behind the scenes, over a long period of time. My first book, called Direct Action, looked at the history of disruptive protest in the U.S. To look at some of the ways this has happened. But there's also a way in which these shifts are tied to other changes, like the rise of the Internet, which has facilitated that kind of very local, decentralized organizing where you just, pull together a small group of people and make something happen.
So when I think of the golden age of protests in my lifetime, it was the period when anti-corporate globalization protests were huge and were exhilarating, kind of ecstatic celebrations of protest. That changed a lot by the time Bush was elected came into office. What happened?
That upbeat sense, I remember it well, the feeling of what we would call a carnival against capitalism, that visionary, upbeat, celebratory side of that movement. But that was also a movement that met with enormous police repression. The crackdown against that kind of organizing was really very far-reaching and often very militarized. And the other thing that really changed was 9/11. And after 9/11, that kind of carnivalesque protest was in the wrong key. It didn't really fit with the somber mood of the country. So the wave of organizing that that followed in the Bush years that led up to the huge protests trying to stop the Iraq War and the much smaller protests protesting it once it happened, had a more subdued quality and also didn't have that same feeling of creative openness. They felt more, and this is as someone who helped create those protests, they felt more formulaic, much more like, restaging kinds of protests we'd seen before.
So I recall the protests that you refer to, the anti-Iraq war protests in 2003 and 2004. I went to New York City to be part of that crowd and with my family, and was just shocked at the what you call a militarized presence there. Everybody was forced to walk in pens, and they were forced to walk for miles before they got to the actual protest site. And the police refused to let people use the restrooms along the way. If you left the everybody was penned in with barricades, and if you left the pen, you weren't able to get back in. It was really extraordinary repression, as you say, of the right to protest. And that seems to be the new normal for these things. Do you find that?
I mean, it is. I mean, not exactly. I mean, that was really extraordinary in that we were, they refused us a permit to march. We had asked for a permit to march and not just to hold a stationary rally. It is true that this trend has come and gone in New York City of how much they use those protest pens, and they did, for instance, for the anniversaries of the Women's March, the marches uptown, they used this pen corralling system that they had pioneered in February 2003. So that comes and goes, but for all the outrages committed under the Trump administration, on the whole, it's certainly in cities, we haven't seen the same level of militarized repression. We've seen more protests than we saw in the Bush era and less direct repression of it so far. We have not been seeing the riot squads and the goon squads and the tear gas and the kinds of militarized responses that we saw to anti-globalization protests that framed that anti-war protest and that some other movements like Black Lives Matter have experienced. On the whole, the big protests against Trump, the policing has been fairly reasonable, I would say.
Interesting.
And that to me, it represents political space that people fought for and that we need to hold and expand. It's, at this point, for the various, egregious, awful things unfolding before us in the Trump era, one thing to note is that the space for protest has not been shut down so far.
So the last protest I went to was the one in New York in 2003, and it was because it was so brutal, and also because 500,000 people in New York City and millions around the world weren't enough to make a difference in that fight. And I thought, why am I doing this? I'm taking basically 2 days to go and protest. It doesn't work. We need to do something else. What do you find other people with that attitude?
Oh yeah, that February 15th, 2003 discouraged an entire generation. And some, that was one of the most effective things that George Bush did by brushing off that day of protest. He managed to leave millions of people feeling discouraged and disempowered in the way that you describe. Part of it was just the objective fact that we had lost, that it was you don't win every movement, you don't win every fight, and it was a devastating loss. The consequences of that foolish, illegal war are still rebounding around the world. I think part of the problem that February 15th, 2003 represents is one about expectations. And when you say protest doesn't work, which is a common refrain, many people say that, or if they don't just state it outright, they ask, like, does protest still work? What my book explores is, what does it mean to to say protest works. Define what working means, right? There's many different kinds of changes that protests can help produce. What is, there's a dominant narrative around protest working, where, you know, in the case of 2003, it would have worked if it had stopped the war. But generally speaking, what people are asking for when they're asking whether or not a protest works is whether or not it leads to short-term policy change or legislative change. And as I explore, there are many, many other things that protests can do. There are many kinds of protests. They work in different ways. They accomplish different things. The process of fighting for social change is a long-haul fight. And sometimes, you know, sometimes a protest can push for a specific policy change. But in the case of the women's marches that kicked off the resistance to Trump, there weren't any policy demands. That wasn't what it was about. It was about something else. It was about a sense of collective empowerment. It was about regaining the sense of hope that if people acted together and joined together, they could create change. It was about feeling in your body the magnitude of the opposition to Trump and feeling that sense of the force on our side. That in turn, I think, you know, has translated into a lot of other ongoing work and ongoing change. A lot of times with movement work, the most crucial thing is morale. And sometimes what, you know, the February 15th, 2003 certainly was a blow to morale. But we saw how the women's marches really energized people and gave people a sense of hope and possibility that they hadn't had in that period between the election and the inauguration. So these questions are always grounded in a specific moment. You can't just say across the board that protest works or it doesn't work. You have to dig a little deeper.